My name is Gina Longi, and I am a program consultant with the National Association of Chronic Disease Directors. So I can get a sense of who is here. How many of you work in a state or local health department? And how many of you work in chronic disease? Nobody. Some? Okay. So I'm going to focus mostly on chronic disease. Hopefully this is about models, though, and will be useful to you. And you don't have to let me know if you are just here waiting patiently for the Q&A and you weren't here for my presentation at all, but thank you for sitting through it anyway. So I'm with the National Association of Chronic Disease Directors, like I said. This is a nonprofit association headquartered in Atlanta that represents all 57 state and territorial health department chronic disease programs. It's an affiliate of the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. So we're a membership organization. I'm working right now in program integration. So we have a council of state folks who are interested in how chronic disease program management can be better integrated to be more effective and efficient. So what I'm going to talk to you about today is about their experience and what we think we're learning from what's happening there. So they really should be listed as the authors, but I'm the one who's here, so I put my name on there. Okay. I also am not getting rich from making this presentation unless you all decide to tip me at the end of it. So what I want to talk to you about today, I'm going to define for you what we mean when we say program integration. It's pretty jargony, so I want to make sure we're all talking about the same thing. I'm going to talk about the context of program integration in chronic disease, like I said, but I think it's applicable outside of chronic disease. I'm going to do this by focusing on three areas. We could go on and on about all kinds of different areas, but we're going to talk today about partnerships, about interventions, and about data as ways to do this integration, and a little bit about what the future might hold. CDC, about a year and a half ago, chose four states to pilot a chronic disease integration program where they negotiated their entire federally funded chronic disease program with CDC so they could look at different ways of optimizing how they do that work. I'm not going to talk about what they're doing here. They've got a session tomorrow afternoon that I direct you to if you're interested. They're doing a pretty comprehensive evaluation of that work, so we should get some great lessons from it. I'm going to talk today about what's happening in the rest of the country instead. So I wanted to remind you of the learning objectives too for this to make sure it's what you wanted to get out of it. We're going to talk, I hope that you'll be able to name three strategies in program integration, describe appropriate goals of program integration, and identify some opportunities for integration that might be appropriate to what you're doing. So that's what I hope you get out of my few minutes with you today. So integrate, small I integrate, collaborate, coordinate, sort of all mean the same thing, but we talk about program integration like it should be in all caps and very meaningful. So I want to try to move away from the jargon of that a little bit and talk about what we mean. Merriam-Webster says it to integrate is to make part of a body or a system. And that's what we're getting at here. We use the Selinsky-Garsky definition that says the strategic alignment of chronic disease categorical program resources to increase effectiveness and efficiency of each program in a partnership without compromising the integrity of categorical program objectives. Without compromising the integrity of the categorical program objectives is where the meat of this definition is for us. We don't want to dissolve the categorical programs. We don't want to dilute their effect. We want to leverage the expertise and the resources of all the different categorical programs in a more efficient and effective way. So strategic and protective are very important concepts in this definition. And I would argue also that our program integration work should be systematic in order to be the most effective it can be. It's important to remember that integration in this context is a process and not an outcome in and of itself. It's a way of doing the work that's in front of us in a more efficient and effective way. We don't yet have clear links between this work and the health outcomes we're trying to impact, but it's our intention and our expectation that the work we're doing is going to result in those health outcomes. And if at some point along the line we find out that it's not, we need to stop the work and reorient ourselves, like all the other speakers today have said. It's that health outcome that we're still working toward. My slides and this logic model and an explanation of this logic model are uploaded onto the APHA site for this session. I didn't expect that you'd be able to read it, but I just wanted to put it up here. It's your traditional logic model that has resources and inputs and outcomes and impacts. And this was developed a couple years ago by the Program Integration and Collaboration Council at NACDD. It's meant to be a starting point for discussion. It was developed with state health departments in mind, but could be used really in any public sector context. If we spent a few minutes, I'm sure we could come up with some things that aren't on here or things that we'd like to move around on here. But really, it's about starting the conversation about what you want to do, what your inputs are, and how you might get there differently from what you're doing today. So some of the strategies that we see happening in state health departments for chronic disease are listed up here. Information sharing across categorical programs, common messaging where that's appropriate, joint partnership management, shared objectives, integrated intervention delivery, which can be pretty complicated but sometimes makes a lot of sense, collaborative planning, shared staff, or even all the way down to matrix management of what you're doing in your chronic disease portfolio. We talk about this as a spectrum, but I think spectrum might not be the right word because that really implies kind of a directionality to it, and I'm not sure that that makes sense. I'm not sure that there is always a directionality to it. We've got it along a line here. I think depending on the project that you're looking at, the activity that you're looking at, your entire portfolio, you might be at different points along this line at any given time. You might be at a couple of different points. Your line might look more like this. And actually, it might even not be two-dimensional. It might be three-dimensional. And not being a graphic artist, I couldn't do that very well. So this is my three-dimensional picture. It's not static. And like I said, more than one thing could be happening at once. And you can change what you're doing over time. But whatever the relationship is, and I should say here that we think it's important to figure out how we can best describe those relationships, so we're continuing to work on that. But whatever that relationship is, it's happening in every single state right now. And so we want to be able to support what's happening in states and help them do it the best way that they can. Everybody, and it's been mentioned by all the speakers so far, is experiencing a big reduction in resources, staff resources and budget resources, layoffs and furloughs, so this work couldn't be more important right now. The crux of it is program integration is about working together. It's about building on common interests and objectives, about finding strategic points of linkage that help the different programs do their work best, and about leveraging those resources. So I want to talk about in the context of data. This is a comic from a guy who has a web comic journal at xkcd.com. It's a pretty nerdy, I see somebody shaking their head out there, programming and engineering web comic, most of which I don't get, but he's got a couple good public health ones. And this one, as a recovering epidemiologist, I really loved. It's called Self-Description. And the first, if you can't quite see it, the first box on the left is a pie chart that says, the white is the fraction of this image which is white, and the black is the fraction of this image which is black, and it goes on across the way there. So when we think about data in terms of program integration, there are two main ways we think about it. One is in data for decision making, how you're going to figure out where resources might be shared or allocated more efficiently. It also might be that you're integrating how you do your data work, how you do surveillance, how you do epidemiology, maybe even how you do evaluation. How you do reporting, how you support your partnership development with data. So I wanted to tell you a couple of stories about things that are happening in data for in program integration. In Indiana, over this last year, the chronic disease director and her staff were thinking about what they might do to be better organized. And so they started looking at some of their different data sources about the things that their federally funded chronic disease programs and some other things that the state had going on in chronic disease were required to collect and look at, and where there was some overlap. And it turned out that, you know, most chronic disease programs are using data from a survey called the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Survey. And that's a bedrock of what happens in state health departments in chronic disease. But they had other data sources that they were looking at too. And there was some overlap in the kind of data that was being reported out of different programs and how it was being used for decision making. They were able to put together a matrix that said, ha, okay, so this source tells us this is important in this area. This source tells us this is important for this other categorical program. And they were able to pretty quickly see what rose to the surface as clear priorities for where things needed to happen in terms of interventions and outcomes in their state. So they used data and a new data matrix, really, for making decisions about how to work together better. West Virginia took a look at how data analysis was happening in their chronic disease programs. Most of their programs had an epidemiologist or a part-time epidemiologist assigned to the program and sort of working in a bubble on that program. And what they decided to do, and this is happening in states all over the country, is to pull that person out and have a data unit so that this created some efficiencies in management for the epidemiologists. They were surrounded by folks working on similar issues. They had people to bounce ideas off of, where when they were sitting in their individual programs, they were feeling isolated and not mentored as well. So they were able to pull out this data function into an epi unit. Interestingly, what they found in West Virginia, and I'm curious to look around and see how this develops in other states, that by pulling that function out, the evaluation work seemed to be compromised, that they missed the connection with the program folks who were doing the day-to-day program evaluation that really had the content knowledge of the program. So they're still figuring out whether having that pulled out as well is the right thing to do or what the right balance is there. So they're still working on that. Then Massachusetts, which is one of the four states chosen for the pilot project, decided to keep their epidemiologists in their programs, but they come together regularly to do work together. And this year they did a comprehensive report on chronic disease impact. And instead of looking at the kinds of reporting they did before, where it was disease by disease, they were able to look at the social determinants of health and risk factors in a broader way in their reporting. And it really energized their partners and their constituents around these issues. So that was pretty interesting. So partnerships. The stork here says, oops, my apologies, ma'am. Looks like you were supposed to get the pepperoni and cheese. Maybe your categorical programs have common partners, or maybe you're looking for a partner that's going to open up new distribution channels for your intervention. But you want to make sure you get it right. So this is maybe a cautionary tale, but maybe there are opportunities to iron this out a little bit if everybody's sitting down together and saying, you know, I am working with the same community-based organization as my colleagues in heart disease and stroke, and maybe we can make it a little bit easier on that organization to work with our health department in a more coordinated way. A colleague of mine tells a story about the impact of partnership on getting different groups to work together that I find really compelling. He was charged with trying to get a system improvement in place where women who presented at the emergency room as victims of domestic violence were referred to social services in a better way. And so they set up this training and they brought in the ER staff and they brought in the social work staff and talked about a new system that they were going to do about getting this referral in place. And when they did the evaluation, what they found out was that, yes, women were getting referred to care and getting care in a more effective manner. But it wasn't because of a new system that they had put in place. It wasn't the intervention. What made the difference was that the ER staff knew the social workers better because they'd been in the room together hanging out. So when I think about the untapped energy, Barbara was talking about the value added, what you get that isn't wasteful. Sometimes partnership just can give you so much more than you expect it to. So I want to tell you a story about Connecticut. Connecticut is has a pretty small health department, and their partners tend to be pretty common across the different chronic diseases. So they had gone to talk to their partners about updating their diabetes plan, and they updated their diabetes plan. And a few months later, they went back to their partners to update their cardiovascular health plan, and their partners said, no, we don't want to do that. Instead, what we want to do is sit down with you, and we want to bring everybody else we can think of to the table, and we want to do a comprehensive statewide chronic disease prevention and control plan. The health department, of course, was delighted. It took some convincing to get the funders on board that was the right thing to do, that they would still be able to see their pathway, that the accountability wouldn't be lost in a comprehensive plan. But there's a case where the partners were really motivated to help out the state health department and maximize their contribution. Another partnership story I wanted to tell you about is happening in California, where the arthritis program for years had been working on a self-management intervention, getting it out as widely as they could, that was really focused on arthritis. So this is a self-efficacy program that focuses on getting you a better relationship with your provider, more support in the community. It's been shown to reduce pain, to reduce healthcare costs. It's an effective community-based class style intervention. But they ran into, they kind of maximized how far they could get it out. There's a similar intervention for diabetes, focused on diabetes, same kind of outcomes, same kind of intervention. Turns out, there's a third one that's more broad and for chronic disease. So California was able to bring together two sets of constituents, two sets of partners, in two categorical programs and offer this one intervention that met the needs of more people. It opened up more channels for delivery so they could get it out in more places. So that are some partnership examples. It's time. I'm going to hurry up here. So this is my favorite. It says, snowmen are obese and they smoke. Well, no wonder they have short lifespans. So by thinking about those broader outcomes, oftentimes you can find ways to bundle your interventions, like clinical preventive services or like injury and nutrition, depending on if you've got the same population or the same intervention that you're trying to get or the same channel that you're trying to get. We have some resources at NACDD. If you're interested, I'll be up here afterwards, and I will talk to you about those or give them to you. We need to be really, really careful in this work around program integration that we don't do kind of the brochure response to things that we do sometimes in public health where we say, oh, we got to work better together, so let's all sit around the table and think about how we do that. There's actual science about how to work better together. There's a whole body of knowledge in organizational development and management that we need to make sure we're tapping into in public health. And we're still in the process of doing that. So those are the kind of resources we are trying to develop. We're trying to make sure we have good evaluation plans that folks can use and tap into, good planning materials that folks can use. So Stay tuned, and we will be able to share those. Thank you.
All of these were great presentations. I took notes doing all of them myself. What I want to do now, since we have a few minutes left, is to bring all of the presenters up and have you ask questions of any of them that you like. Yes, ma'am.
My question is for Barbara Schechter. Regarding the black belts, you mentioned that there were four black belts that you have in your health department. I was wondering if those were new positions, or were they existing staff that were promoted to black belts, and so what happened to their existing roles?
That's a great question. That's a really good question. They're not separate positions. I, for example, am a black belt, okay? My day job, what is my day job called? I'm the administrative director for public health. I'm also a black belt. And the theory is that being a black belt is a part of who we are and what we do every day, so that it's not a separate position of someone who runs around and beats people up with a black belt. It's training that I get and I share with my colleagues that help me and my colleagues work better, learn more, do more. Is that making sense?
Other questions?
Good, that's another good question. We, excuse me, our public health department here in Denver is integrated with a large hospital system, so we're a big integrated unit. And the hospital decided to commit to this lean thing, and we're one of, I think, four or six now major hospital organizations nationwide who committed to the lean program. And so Simpler, which was a consulting firm, is the one that introduced us to this whole process and has been training us. We now have taken all of that responsibility in-house and are now creating future generations because we now train one another. Is that enough? Is that clear enough? But I think there are outside consultants you can use. I know that Denver Health has now begun working with other organizations and sending many of us who are trained either as black belts or as master black belts out to share with our colleagues. So that's how we're kind of spreading the word.
Other questions?
Some folks from the agency in Atlanta. I'm just wondering, with the process, I've worked with the federal government and I worked locally to try and manage these projects in the enterprise. The idea that the government is wise enough to bring in a team is so beautiful. I'm wondering if you know if this is unique to the CDC or if this is happening in other agencies. So it's really a smart move.
I think it's happening at other agencies. I'm not sure to what extent it's happening within those. We do communicate with other contractors, other consultants. So we know that they're doing some work, but I'm not sure the expanse of their work and what they're responsible for.
And is this the work in your division? Is this one of the pieces of work you offer to clients to help them with these kinds of massive processes?
Yes.
Well,
it's something that the company offers, the consulting firm offers, so it's basically program project management.
Mm-hmm. We do know that other operating divisions within HHS are doing it, but to what degree and what it looks like, it may look a little different. I think we're all on calls with everyone on board, and they talk about it in similar ways, but they're not doing it exactly the way that the CDC does. But we'd love to be a model for others.
Yeah.
It's been a combination of both. Each program could use 0.5% of the Recovery Act funding for management and operations. We did receive a little bit of that to do our work, but now the coordinating unit that we support has moved into one of our organizations. Sorry. And that organization is now providing the continued funding for us.
And one thing we've also noted is that the amount that was allocated, and I think it was a congressional mandate, was not enough. So.
We used a combination we used SAS to get the data together, and then we used SPSS for the control charts. We're actually developing the software ourselves. the web-based software to put it online.
Other questions, comments? Yes.
About the dashboard, do you use the dashboard to assist organizations with strategic planning?
This will be used by LIPA, yes, for their strategic planning. Part of what we did was we took the quality indicators for each group, and one of those groups was the strategic planning team that within their organization was taken from different departments and different, and so they will actually track their, for 2009, what they, the goals and outcomes that they wanted for 2009, they will actually track those, and then when they revise those for 2011 or 2012, they that will be tracked on their dashboard as well.
So for strategic planning, in this case, the quality indicators they used reflected what was known in the organization. Do they have a process where they looked at what they wanted to do, something that was more forward-reaching, looking at environmental factors that might impact what kind of dashboard indicators you might want? Was there all your quality indicators are based on internal information?
Right.
Strategic planning, a good portion mm-hmm. of it, or some portion at least, had to do with external factors.
Right. Okay. So here's an example. So they wanted to improve provider relationships, physician relationships. So we might have 15 quality indicators that would tell us whether those relationships internally, whether those relationships were improved. And some of those quality indicators they were already tracking, some of them they weren't. So for example, they already had some quantitative data, but they might need to do some qualitative surveys with those providers to determine their satisfaction. So it's a combination.
Go ahead. Well, while you're talking about this, you know, my sense is that public health isn't as attentive to the fiscal impact of the programs. And looking at the fiscal bottom line, it's on your dashboard. Has this dashboard changed the consciousness of the public health leaders towards being more aware or more sensitive?
Well, this is actually being used by a private managed care organization that manages a Medicaid population. So it's really more of a health plan payer. It could translate over, but of course, health plans that are state or federally funded only have a certain amount of funds that they get, just like a state health agency. And they get actually two buckets. They get administrative dollars and they get medical dollars. So, and those are limited. So if they can reduce their administrative costs, be more efficient, spend less in that administrative bucket of services, and they can use some of those funds to improve like disease prevention, coordination, member outreach, coordination of benefits, actually in some cases cover more things, because with Medicaid dollars, there's a limited number of funds. So they were conscious of it from a payer standpoint. In terms of public health agencies, I'm not sure what their level of consciousness is about the dollars coming in and how those are used.
Well, yeah, the dollars are tightening up.
The dashboard would be helpful for that.
We're developing one from our organization then.
Well, I mean, the dashboard and me really kind of go together. I'm wondering if you've had that experience.
Can I just yell?
Sure.
actually, we're doing the same thing. We're developing a dashboard at Denver Health as well. Ours has different factors, but we have different, you know, whatever your age is, your vision. And we have layered dashboards, just as she was talking, Amanda was talking about, for different levels of users, executive staff. But those two things coming together are very powerful tools. I don't think any of us has a choice. I mean, if we had buckets of money, we could all afford to go on, you know, narrowly down that path. But we all have really hard decisions to make. These are the kinds of tools I think that all of us have talked about that really work.
Is there one last question? If not, thanks for attending this session, and let's express our gratitude to this panelist. Thank you. Well, great.